and recap on where we got to just before the break. We had an example connecting our two campuses together, and what did we say? We had a 2 megabit per second, I'll just summarize our example, a 2 megabit per second WiMAX link. We calculated each call generated 55.6 kilobits per second. We were sending it 50 packets per second, which allowed us to have 37 voice calls. So what we did is we looked at a single voice call, which takes our voice, and in our example, it samples a voice at a particular size, generates RTP packets, and sends them. And the speed at which RTP packets were sent from a source computer for a single voice call, we calculated to be 50 packets per second. Because of the codec that we used, which was G726, that codec specified that we had 200 samples per second and 4 samples per packet, which meant to send 200 samples per second, we'd need to send 50 packets per second, where each packet contained 4 samples. So we've got our computer sending 50 packets into the internet per second, each containing 4 samples of our voice, or 20 milliseconds of our voice. And with a 2 megabit per second capacity, we can, in theory, fit 37 voice calls. Was it 37? I think is the answer we got to. 2 megabit per second. 5.6 kilobits per second. It's interesting to consider what happens if we try to send more. So let's look in a little bit more depth here and maybe generalize. So we have a router. So this is our network in a little bit more detail. We have all of our source computers, that is the office computers in this campus. Here are only 3, but we'd have many connected to a switch and then a router. These links are fast, much faster than our link between the two campuses were. Let's say 1 gigabit per second, which means we can send at 1 gigabit per second across here, but once it gets to the router, we could only send at 2 megabit per second across that link. But let's, instead of having a single link between the campuses, let's say, or generalize to say, okay, this is the internet. So it's not necessarily between two campuses, it's between any two sites. Somewhere in the US, somewhere in Bangkok, connected via the internet here. What happens when we try to send too fast? Well, we know that a router has, if we look into the detail, has some queue or queuing mechanisms. As packets come in from these source computers, they're put into the queue, and the router sends them out when it can. And in this case, the router can send out at 2 megabits per second. The rate that's coming in from each source was 55 kilobits per second. Let's try and think in terms of packets per second, though. Each voice call we worked out was 50 packets per second. Rather than thinking kilobits per second, just as an alternative, think in packets per second. So 2 megabits per second of voice packets . One voice call is 50 packets per second. 37 voice calls is 37 voice calls is about 1,850 packets per second. Let's say our capacity of this link is not 2 megabits per second, but 2,000 packets per second, which is approximately 2 megabits per second. It's a little bit different, but just so we can count in packets per second. This computer sends 50 packets per second. This one, each voice call, 50 packets per second. So if we have many computers, well, start simple. If we have three computers making a voice call, each are sending 50 packets per second, our gigabit Ethernet link can support much faster than that. This link can support 2,000 packets per second. So what happens? For this router, we have 150 coming in, 150 packets per second, 2,000 going out. So no problem for the router in this case, because as the packets come in, they immediately send out. We start increasing the number of people making voice calls. Instead of 3, we have 30. If we have 40 people making a voice call with 40 sources, each sending at 50 packets per second, then we've got our 2,000 packets per second coming in. So from our router's perspective, we've got 2,000 voice packets every second coming in, and it's got the capability to send 2,000 out. We've reached the capacity of the router. A packet comes in, quickly put into the memory and immediately sent out. So that's okay. That was with 40 people making a voice call. Now, 41 sources. 41 voice calls at the same time. Another 50 packets coming in. That is a total 41 people talking at the same time. 2,050 packets per second coming into the router, it can only send 2,000 packets out. So every second we're going to have to store some packets in the router's buffer, in its memory. And those packets are going to be delayed because we don't have enough capacity to send them right now. We have to send them slightly later. So these packets, let's say every second we've got 2,000 going out, we've got 2,050 coming in, so every second there are 50 packets that need to be buffered. That extra 50. They are stored in the router memory, in the buffer, and then later they are transmitted when the others have already been transmitted. So there's some extra delay. On the packets. In addition, we keep sending in 2,050 per second, 2,000 going out. If we send even more, 42, 43 voice calls, this will go up to 2,100, 2,150, then eventually maybe the buffer of the router will become full. There's only a fixed amount of memory available. The packets coming in fill up the buffer. One new packet comes in, is going to be dropped. There's no room to save it in the memory of the router, therefore we drop that packet, and that's going to impact upon our application. So, as the number of voice calls increases, we were okay with 3 people talking. We were okay with up to 40 people talking. When we got to 41 sources, some of the packets started to be delayed. When we keep increasing the number of people making voice calls, we may eventually get some packets dropped as well. Some packets are delayed, some packets are dropped, and in fact the delay goes up. So in the result, in the internet, when we make voice calls, the more people making a call at the same time, in general, we increase the delay. And eventually may increase the packet drop. So in a particular network with some capacity, once we approach that capacity, the delay will go up and the packet drops will go up. If delay goes up for our voice calls, our quality goes down. Because we want to keep the delay within some range. Because if the delay is too large, then it's hard to converse. In fact, we haven't looked, but it also may affect jitter because the buffer is growing and reducing. So some packets, the delay may vary. We know as the jitter goes up, the quality at the receiver will go down. As the packet drops goes up, we can cope with some packet drops. That is, the receiver can still decode, except once the packet drops reach or start to increase to the several percent, then again, the quality is going to go down at the receiver. So, in the internet, unless we have some control, the more people that make voice calls, the lower the quality is going to be for each person. Whereas in a normal fixed public switch telephone network, the old style telephone network, the system only allows a certain number of people to make voice calls. It has some control as to how many people make voice calls. For example, in this case, we would have mechanisms to say that no more than 40 can make a call at the same time. In which case, everyone would get the same performance and get satisfactory delay and no packet drop. But in the internet, without any control, the delay will go up, and the packet drop will go up, and the quality will go down. The only control we have is the things that we looked at in the quality of service mechanisms. But they are not necessarily built into the general internet architecture, only in some specific networks. So that's why when you make a voice call with Skype, with you have voice chat, video chat with MSN or any other program, then the quality may go down at particular points in time. So let's look at other factors that are going to are necessary for our voice calls to work. Let's summarize where we got to before lunch. We mentioned translation and mixing. The other aspect of a voice call is RTP is about transferring the data. What about setting up the voice call? When you pick up the phone and you dial someone's number, what happens to make the other person's phone ring? And that's referred to as signaling. So in voice communication, signaling is the concept that is used for establishing a telephone call. In the normal telephone network, in the public switch telephone network, there's a system called Signaling System 7, SS7. That is used when you've got your old style, your normal telephone, you pick up the phone, you get a dial tone. That's part of Signaling System 7 as to why you got the dial tone. You push some numbers, and then signaling system number 7 goes to work and sends some special messages to the destination phone via some switches and starts, therefore, the destination phone to ring. When they pick up at the destination, then SS7 goes to work and sends back a response, and that's when you hear that they've picked up and you can start talking to them. So signaling is the process of setting up the call and doing some other call management features. So with SS7, given a destination phone number, form a circuit from source to destination. We're using circuit switching. It also handles other features like call forwarding. You want to forward your number to another number. Error reporting if there's errors, busy signals and so on. In the internet, if we want to make voice calls, we don't have the public switch telephone network. We don't have circuit switching. So we need an equivalent protocol. And in the internet, there have been two proposed standards for signaling. One is SIP, Session Initiation Protocol, and the other is H323. And SIP is the main one in use today, or perhaps the most dominant one. So that's what we'll look at. SIP's purpose, same as SS7, set up a voice call. But also has other purposes. So we have a caller, someone who's making the call, and they're calling the callee, and they want to inform the callee that they want to start a call. And SIP will allow us to do that, but do things that are also necessary for our voice over IP using RTP. For example, agree upon what codecs to call, to use. Do we use G726 or do we use G711 or some other codec? So SIP can allow us to do that. We're in the internet, we use IP addresses to identify the destination. In a public switch telephone network, we have a different addressing scheme. We have our telephone number as the addressing scheme. In IP, we use IP addresses. SIP can do more advanced things like we can change codecs during a call, have group calls, invite new participants into the call, and so on. Call holding and those mechanisms. SIP is an application-level protocol, so it runs on top of UDP and in some special cases TCP. So similar to, and it has similar structure to HTTP. HTTP is a protocol for transferring web browsers, for browsing the web. SIP is a protocol for signaling across the internet, especially for voice calls, but also other applications. It sends, so the messages that are sent are text-based, similar to HTTP. In HTTP, we send a GET request, which is just a piece of text, GET some URL, and we send back a HTML page. SIP has similar style text messages. And we can use addresses in the format which are similar to email addresses. But for example, we use the identifier SIP, username at some domain. And these map to IP addresses of particular computers. SIP doesn't specify how to transfer the data. We set up a call, we can use different mechanisms to transfer the audio. RTP is one of them, but there are others as well. So just to record that in a stack type diagram. In fact, we can differentiate between the signaling aspect and the data transfer. So let's make it a bit bigger. We have our, as an example, in my computer, we have our Ethernet card. We have IP. Our transport layer. Which may include UDP and TCP. They both run on top of IP. There are others as well. I hide some details. And then we have some application protocols. One of them we're going to use for transferring the data is RTP, and RTP runs on top of UDP. And we also have SIP for the signaling aspect of the voice call. Not for data transfer, but for setting up the voice call. And normally that uses UDP as well. And of course, our computer has other application level protocols for different applications. So, for your, and then maybe on top of that, make some more space. We have the software for our voice application. Skype, for example. In fact, but Skype doesn't use SIP, so that's a bad example. A different voice application that does use SIP, say on an inbuilt phone, IP phone, and uses RTP. This voice application would tell SIP to set up a call. SIP would go to work, we'll show how it does. It will send a message to the destination saying, I want to call you, and we'll get a response. And once the call is set up, voice application would then start recording your voice or converting your voice from analog into binary and using RTP to send your voice across the internet. So they are both using UDP, both part of the application or part of the operating system to support voice applications. SIP is for control and signaling, RTP is for the actual data. So here's an example of how SIP works, where we have a caller and a callee, and we show over time what happens. So the caller and callee have IP addresses, they are computers on the internet. In addition, the people have usernames. For example, Bob is, right, it has an IP address. He could have a domain name, in this example, just an IP address. Bob is identified by the username Bob at this IP address. A SIP, or the SIP at the callee, listens on port 5060 by default. So when Alice makes the call, so the source computer, that is, they're using the application, they click on Bob's name to call Bob in the computer application. The application goes to work and tells SIP to make a call, connect to Bob. So this is what SIP does. It sends a special invite message to Bob's computer. It knows the destination address because Alice must know the address of Bob. That is, in this example, Alice knows they want to call Bob at 193.64.210.89. If Alice doesn't know Bob's IP address, then we'd need to use the domain name system. So maybe it's invite Bob at sit.tu.ac.th. Same as when you open your web browser, you type in, I want to go to www.sit.tu.ac.th. You know the destination address. You normally know the domain name, but the domain name is in fact mapped to an IP address. So normally, in this example, we use the IP address just to hide the domain name complexity. But in practice, you wouldn't, for example, know Bob is Bob at sit.tu.ach. DNS would tell you that sit.tu.ac.th is 193.64.210.89. We'll see something if Bob has moved. That is, if someone moves around. So at this moment, let's assume Bob is at this computer in this case. In the later slides, we'll see what happens if he moves. We send an invite message. It goes to the SIP software running on Bob's computer, listening on port 5060. It recognizes, okay, someone's inviting me to call. To talk. If everything's okay, well, Bob's phone rings, the software rings, or if it's an IP phone, it rings. Bob picks up or answers, and some okay message comes back saying, I'll accept this call. And that comes back to port 5060 here, and a final acknowledgement saying everything's okay. So this is the basic setup. These three messages setting up the call. After that, we transfer our audio in both directions. So this is the voice call itself. Now, some of the details we see in the invite message, we have something about the media and the codec being the media in this case. It's audio. We can use SIP to do other things for video calls. For instant messaging, it's commonly used. So it doesn't have to be a voice call. The port number that we're going to use for the transfer of audio. So we tell the other side, once the call is set up, let's use port 38060 to communicate. And the protocol we're going to use, RTP, and AVP refers to the audio-video profile. What type of codec are we going to use, for example? AVP0 refers to one particular set of codecs. When Bob responds, so this is the media that's going to be transferred from, now let's get this correct, this is the media that Alice expects to receive. Alice expects to receive on port 38060 using AVP0. Like this. If you go back to one of the slides that listed the different media codecs for RTP, the one identified with protocol number 0 is the PCM 64 kilobit per second codec, which is sometimes referred as MULAW audio, just another name. The profile AVP3, or the protocol 3, is the GSM codec. So, Alice invites Bob to make a call, and also says they want to receive on this port number the PCM encoded voice. When Bob responds, Bob says, I want to receive on this port number audio with AVP3, which is the GSM encoded voice. So just agreeing upon the codecs to use in the voice call. And we can use different codecs in each direction. And the final ACK, and then we transfer data. This is when Bob talks, his phone converts using the PCM or MULAW codec and sends it as many RTP packets. And similarly, in the opposite direction, we use the GSM codec when Alice talks and sending as RTP packets to this destination port. And then, of course, we could cancel or close the call. There are signaling messages in SIP to hang up. When someone ends the call, we'd send some special messages to say the call has ended. We're not going to go through any of the other details of SIP. You may have seen in another course. You can study that in your own time. It's just the concept of setting up the call, using IP addresses, using informing the other side of the media codecs to use. And once we've set up the call, we use our data transfer mechanism, in our case RTP, to transfer the actual media. SIP isn't about transferring the audio, it's just the call signaling. What if Bob moves? Not everyone is sitting at their computer all the time. Sometimes they're at work, sometimes they go home, so they're at different computers. So how do we handle that? Because still, if you want to call Bob, you don't want to have to know that he's at home. You would like to call Steve at SIT, and whether I'm at work, at home, or somewhere else, you'd still like to be able to call me and contact me. There are different ways to do that. In SIP, we actually use different register servers. So in IP, we know that DNS maps domain names to IP addresses. So the SIT domain name is mapped to an IP address. But in the internet, those domain names and IP addresses, that mapping is normally fixed. It doesn't change very much. But if users want to move, Steve at SIT, that SIT domain maps to a single IP address. If I go home, I've got two options. I either, you have to call me at Steve at sandylands.info at a different domain name, but how do you know whether I'm at home or at work? you don't, or somehow change the IP address, the mapping from the domain name to the IP address. Things like mobile IP would do this for us, but SIP has a built-in mechanism to handle this called registrar servers. A registrar server keeps track of a user's current IP address, so it doesn't make use of DNS. So each user has an associated registrar. I would register at the SIT server. When a user starts their application, when I start my SIP software on my computer, that client software informs my server of my IP address. And then we have proxy servers to handle the invites. The invite is when someone makes a call and they specify the destination address. The proxy server will handle that on behalf of the users. Let's see an example to explain them. Here's the case where, let's get the set up, that is, this is from the two authors of the textbook, or one of the textbooks, Jim and Keith. So Jim is going to call Keith. And Keith is normally this address. Let's write it down. The destination address. That's his home university. So the callee, Jim, the caller, Jim, knows Keith by this identifier. So he would call this address. In his SIP client software, he would either click on the list of contacts or type in this address to make a call to Keith. But Keith is no longer at his, or is not at his university, he's visiting some other institute, and he has informed his university server that he is moved to this other institute, Eurocom, in France. So here is the registrar server for Keith's home network. Here is the registrar for Keith's visited network. This is in the US. This is Keith visiting some network in France. Here is a proxy for the caller's home network. So Jim So this is Jim's address. So what Jim does is invites Keith to a call by sending the first message, an invite, a SIP invite message. Instead of sending it direct to Keith, Jim sends it to his local proxy server. So this, Jim is in his, they're in the same network, so the same university network. So Jim's SIP client must know the address of his local proxy server. That's okay. When he configured his SIP client, he said, my proxy server is the address of this. The invite goes to the proxy. The proxy sees, okay, we need to contact Keith and sends it to the appropriate registrar server, but this registrar server knows that Keith is visiting some other network. So it sends back a response saying, contact Keith via this other network, Eurocom. Therefore, the proxy sends the message, the invite to here. The invite then goes to Keith. Keith responds saying everything's okay. The response comes back via these two servers to the caller, Jim. And that's SIP finished. Those first eight messages are part of SIP signaling. Message 9, or the exchange of data in 9, is the data transfer of the voice call. Now they start talking. And their data just goes over the internet. It doesn't have to go via these servers. It's just the setup of a call that goes via these servers. Now we just send direct over the internet. So there are ways to handle when people move. So now if I have an address, steve@sit.tuacth, it doesn't matter where I am in the world, using the proxy servers and registrar servers, you can call me at that address, and the system should direct an invite to my computer, and I would respond. Are you joining this class? Are you joining this class? Are you sure? You can sit down the front. I know you enjoy the class. You want to come every lecture, but sometimes you miss. So let's. Don't have to be right down the front. Here is okay. No rush. It's all right. Yep. No. This maps to an IP address. And then the proxy or the registrar will know about the IP address. So, for example, Keith starts his SIP software, his IP phone software. That tells the local registrar his IP address. So, before any of this happened, assume that when Keith started his software, a special message was sent to here saying my IP address is 197.87.54.21. Now, when the invite comes to here, and the invite is destined to Keith, then the registrar knows the exact IP address to respond. So the domain maps to an IP network, in particular, a registrar server. The domain indicates, well, a packet sent to this destination will deliver to the registrar, which is maintaining for that network, that domain, and that registrar server will keep track of the individual clients that are in the network. There are many more parts of SIP, and it's a very complex protocol for doing other things like call forwarding, group calls, and it's not just used for voice calls. It can also be used for video and other applications. So SIP is, in fact, a general protocol for initiating and managing sessions. So it's the session initiation protocol. It's not a voice setup protocol, it's for any type of sessions. A session is when we want to exchange some data for some period of time, a voice session, or a video call, so we can set up a video call. Some data sessions, instant messaging. Some instant messaging applications can use SIP to send and set up sessions, and then data is transferred immediately or directly between the client. So it has a more broad application than just voice calls, but commonly used for voice applications. So today, these are the main protocols supported for voice over the internet. SIP for signaling, RTP for data transfer, RCTP for managing or exchanging information about the data transfer. There are different types of devices that use these protocols. A soft phone, say a piece of software running on your normal computer that implements them. A standalone phone, like a purpose-built phone, which is an IP phone. Or you can also get adapters for your old normal PSTN phones. So you could use the old phone, but it has an adapter connected so that it sends data using RTP and sets up calls using SIP over the internet. Note that Skype, which is perhaps the most popular voice application used in the internet does not use these, or it uses its own proprietary protocols. There are many other pieces of software that do use SIP and RTP, and even some normal telephone operators, telecom companies, will use SIP and RTP for voice calls, international calls. Many of the cheap phone call companies use SIP and RTP. Skype does not. MSN, for example, if you do an MSN voice call or video call, I don't think it does. I think Gmail does support SIP and some other applications. Okay, that's about voice calls over the internet. We need to set up a call. We need to exchange codec information when we're making a call. And then we can send the audio data using RTP. Before we look at streaming stored audio and video, so this is the case of, for example, YouTube, where we have a video or audio file stored on some server, and we'd like to stream that to either a single client or to many clients. Not live, we'll see what we can do with live, and not conversational, just one way. But before we do that, let's change the topic for 10 minutes or so and look at some aspects of the assignment. Actually, even before that, any questions before we finish on voice over IP? Easy? Any problems? Okay. All right. Let's look at or discuss some aspects of the assignment. Many people have, or several people have asked questions, so let's look at some things. So, four parts to the assignment. Remember, we're testing TCP, not UDP. I'm really not interested in the performance of UDP. You need to use UDP in some cases to make sure things are working, and in some of the last set of scenarios, but the focus is on TCP, and in particular the throughput performance of TCP. So really the main performance metric that you should be reporting and recording is what IPERF calls is the bandwidth, which we know is really the throughput, the rate at which we can receive data at the server. That's what we care about. And what we care about is finding out what different factors impact upon that. What makes it go up and down? So first, break it into four different parts. Single TCP session, so from a client to a server, and change some of the IPERF parameters. I'll show you two of them in a moment, the two main ones. They're listed here. The second set, run a single TCP from client to server, change some of the network conditions. In particular, link data rate, link delay, link drop rate. You can also do other things. So this is where you use TC, and in terms of the drop rate, you use IP tables. So you know the commands for changing these. You need to investigate what happens when you change them. In which cases does it impact upon performance? Third set. No. Go on. When you're doing one set of tests, that is let's say you're measuring the impact of changing the delay. So maybe what you do is you run a test with delay, no extra delay using TC, just normal test. Then you use TC and set the delay to an extra 10 milliseconds, run a test. Then you set it to 20 milliseconds, run a test, or run multiple tests, take the average. When you're running these tests of just changing the delay, you should keep the other parameters to their default values. The window and the length should be their default values. You do not need to specify them when looking at the delay. The drop rate should be zero. That is, start simple. Just change one parameter at a time. Just change the delay. Record the bandwidth. Then set everything back to normal. Just change the packet drop rate and record the performance. So just do one parameter at a time. Don't start varying two or three things at the same time. It'll become too complex. Set three multiple TCP sessions. Again, set everything and the preceding back to default. But the idea is, what happens when we have many people sending across the same link? And some of you have discovered that iPerf actually has a command, an option, the minus uppercase P, that allows you to do that, to allow multiple sessions. You can do that, or you can do it manually. So you have your two laptops connected via a single cable. The multiple sessions is really, the concept is, imagine you have three applications that want to communicate with three applications on the same destination computer. This creates a TCP session. This one does. And this one. That is, we have three parallel TCP sessions over the same link. If this link was our 100 megabit per second Ethernet cable, some of you have discovered when you use a single TCP session, maybe you get a throughput of around 95 megabits per second, because there are overheads involved. So I've seen some of you get, I think, 93, 94 megabits per second when the data rate is 100. Now, when you use three parallel sessions, so this is when there's just one session, one TCP. Maybe when you use two TCP sessions, maybe you'll get 47 plus 47. That is, maybe one will get 47 and the other will get 47, giving us a total of 94. I don't know. You need to investigate this. So the things we're interested in from this result are the total. How does it compare to this one? And also, what may be of interest is, are these the same? Maybe when you do three, like this case, you may see that each of them get the same, given a total of 90. Or maybe it's a total of 96. It may be higher than before. Or maybe it's something like this. One of them gets 10 megabits per second, the other two get 40 megabits per second. What would cause that? Still giving us the same. So this result is different from this one. The total is the same, if you can read this. This is 90 and 90, but the fairness amongst the three sessions differs. Here they are fair. Everyone gets the same. Here it would be unfair. This one application gets much less than the other two. If you see this, at least make note of it or record this data, and you may want to comment on that. So that's the concept of multiple TCP sessions. iPerf has a minus P option that will do it automatically, or you can manually do it just in three different windows, for example. You can try more than three. The last set, same concept, but now let's introduce also a UDP session. 3 TCP, and also someone sent a UDP traffic. Remember, with IPERF, with UDP, we need to specify the data rate, the rate at which we need to send. With UDP, the application sends, well, there's no limit on the rate at which an application sends. In IPERF, we specify what that limit is. So by default, it's 1 megabit per second. In IPERF, the minus B option tells you how fast the UDP IPERF should send. What would we expect here? Maybe we'd expect if UDP is sending 10 megabits per second, capacity is 100, maybe the remaining 90 is shared amongst the three TCPs, minus some overhead. So you can, of course, try different variations. You don't have to try hundreds, but some different variations of, say, one TCP plus one UDP, two TCPs plus one UDP. See what impact that has on TCP's performance. We don't care so much about UDP's performance, but what's happening with TCP. So that are the four scenarios you're investigating. Let's look at the first one, because there's some confusion, or it's not clear exactly how IPERF, what IPERF does with the TCP buffer or window size and the length of data. So let's try and make that clear. There are two parameters which we've listed here. The minus W parameter in IPERF sets what IPERF calls the TCP window size, and the minus L parameter sets the length. See if we can see how that works. When we start IPERF, it prints out the window size. 85.3 kilobytes. So that's the default value. And we can change it using the minus W option. We'll see. So minus W, 20 kilobytes. Now note, it gives some warning. I requested 20 kilobytes, but it set it to 40 kilobytes. I'll explain that in a moment. But this is how we can change the window size, and this is where it's reported, the actual value. So that's the window. The other thing is the length, and we can set the length using the minus L option. It doesn't show anything there. If we look in the man pages, somewhere it reports the default value. Length, default, 8 kilobytes. So IPERF uses a default value of 8 kilobytes for the length. Let's explain what they mean and how those two are related. We have our source IPERF application, the client, and on our other computer, the destination or the server. And, of course, we're using TCP as the transport protocol. I'll draw that here. And what happens is that all IPERF does, it's a program for testing the speed at which we can transfer data. So what it does, it just generates random data and tries to send it. TCP will then deliver it to the destination and send to this copy of IPERF, which will record how fast it received or how much it received in what period of time. and report back a result at the end saying, I received 100 megabytes over a period of 20 seconds. Therefore, we can calculate the bandwidth or throughput. For any application to communicate with TCP, we use a programming construct called sockets. Some of you have seen them in a lab, or at least heard of them. If not, you'll see them tomorrow in a lab. Some have, some are not. But sockets is a program construct for an application to communicate with TCP. And we do that via a buffer, a piece of memory. What happens is that the application in the source code calls a write or a send function to send data. That data is put into the buffer, written to memory, and when TCP is ready, it takes it out of the buffer and follows its rules. Remember, TCP has rules of flow control, error control, congestion control, and delivers it as segments across the internet. When the receiving TCP receives those segments, it takes the data it's received, and we have another buffer here, and it puts the data into the buffer, and this iPerf application, again using a sockets interface, reads the data from the buffer when it's ready. So this application writes or puts data into the buffer, TCP takes it out, sends it, TCP here puts it into the buffer, iPerf reads it and takes it out of the buffer. So, the parameter minus W sets what's called a TCP window size, or if we look at the man page, it describes as minus W, TCP window size, or socket buffer size. It's the size of our buffer. Minus W sets the size of this buffer. So when we start, minus W is the option here, and same here. So when you, on your server, use the minus W option, you're specifying the size of this. It has a default size, like I saw on my computer, was 85 kilobytes. We can change it. Now, note we saw on my case, I tried to set it to 20 kilobytes, but that gave me a warning. We've set it to 40 kilobytes. You requested 20. What actually happens when we try to set that buffer size, the operating system allocates 20 kilobytes for data and allocates another 20 kilobytes just for maintaining some information to support TCP running. Not used for data transfer, but just for memory used for TCP. So that's why it reports, we've actually used 40 kilobytes, even though you've requested 20. So don't miss that point when you report it. Just record at least one of those values and make sure you record the same one each time and make note of which one you record. It's best to record the value that's reported under TCP window size, not the value that you set. I'll show you again. When I run iPerf, in my case, it says the window size is 85.3 kilobytes, the default. If I try to set it, I tried to set it to 20 kilobytes, minus 20k. It says you requested 20, but we set it to 40. Record this value, just so you're consistent, 85, 40, and so on. It means that there's a total of 40 kilobytes of memory allocated, but only 20 are used for the data transfer. It's just how the operating system manages the memory. So that's the W option. The L option, a little bit more detail, the sockets. What happens if we looked at the source code of this application, it calls a function such as write. That is, this program calls the write function, which takes some data of a particular size and puts it into a buffer. TCP will take it out and try and send it. Here, when we're ready to receive that data, we call a read function. And we indicate the size, the amount that we want to read from the buffer. This size is how much we put into the buffer each time. If my buffer was 80 kilobytes and the size was 8 kilobytes, it's how much data we put into the buffer every time we call this write function. That's the minus L option, the length. Similar, when we read from the buffer at the receiver, our code extracts data from the buffer. The amount that we read each time is, again, specified by the minus L option. So, minus W, the maximum size of our buffer, different at the client and the server. Minus L, the amount we put into the buffer each time we write or read, each time we want to send or receive. What IPERF does is, with a value of 8 kilobytes of the default value of the length, is it puts 8 kilobytes into the buffer and then goes back and tries to put another 8 kilobytes in the buffer until the buffer is full. It just tries to keep putting data in there so that TCP always has data to send. And TCP will try and send it as fast as possible. If TCP is very slow, link data rate is slow or the receiver is slow, then maybe the application will stop writing because the buffer becomes full. So you need to experiment with those values, minus W and minus L, and see how it impacts. One last point. And this is important because you have different computers. Some people have a 100 megabit per second link. Some people have a 1 gigabit per second link between their two computers. What's the speed of your link? When you've run some tests, I know you've run some tests, what's the speed, the data rate of your link? 1 gigabit per second in your case. What was the data rate of your link when you ran your test, the capacity of your link, maximum speed? That's the throughput. What was your link capacity? 100. In your case, you've run some tests. Yes. And what's the capacity of your link? I think you showed me some numbers. What's the throughput you received? 600 and something. What do you guess the capacity is? 600 megabits per second? Capacity is most likely 1 gigabit per second. Most of you are using your computers when using Ethernet cards. Ethernet is either 10 megabit per second, 100 megabit per second, 1 gigabit per second. Most of the laptops support 1 gigabit per second. Some of them may default to 100 megabits per second. I think most new laptops can support all three. So some of you may be running tests where the link capacity is 100. Some may be running tests where the link capacity is 1,000 megabits per second. Record what your link capacity is. Now, the thing that becomes important is with different window sizes, depending upon the capacity of the link and the delay of the link, the window size has an impact. And I'm not sure if anyone's seen it, but you'll see something called the bandwidth delay product. The bandwidth delay product is a concept of simply the bandwidth of your link multiplied by the round trip time of your link. If my link is 100 megabits per second and my round trip time is 1 millisecond, this is 10 to the 8 bits per second, this is 10 to the minus 3 seconds, the bandwidth delay product, let's call it BDP, is this times this, which is 10 to the power of 5 bits. That's an example. What's important is the relationship between the bandwidth delay product and the window at the receiver, at the server, the buffer size. If the window is smaller than your bandwidth delay product, then you should see the throughput performance going down. And that's something you should try and investigate. Because people have different bandwidth delay products, what I suggest is either using TC to change these values. If your link is 100 megabit per second, most likely your round trip time is around 1 millisecond, 1 or 2 milliseconds. Your bandwidth delay is 10 to the power of 5 bits, which is what? 100,000 bits, which is 12 kilobytes. This is a bandwidth delay of 12 kilobytes. My default window is 85 kilobytes. If my window was 10 kilobytes, that is less than the bandwidth delay product, I will most likely see a decrease in performance of TCP. I'd like you to investigate that and think about why that's the case. So what I suggest you do, because people have different link rates, is to use TC perhaps to change the round trip time. If I set the round trip time to 100 milliseconds, 100 milliseconds is 100 times this, which is 10 to the power of minus 1, which would give us a bandwidth delay product, which is 100 times this, which is 100 times that, which would give us 12. If I change my round trip time to 100 milliseconds, my bandwidth delay product would change to 1.2 megabytes or 1200 kilobytes. That is much larger than my window size. If I did a test in this case, there should be a significant difference in the throughput performance of TCP. So, alternatively, I could have changed my link data rate. I could have reduced this. What I suggest you do is say if you have a link rate of 1 megabit per second, try a large round trip time of 100 milliseconds with the default window size. See how the performance compares. So when you change the delay or change the link data rate, think about the window size, especially at the server, and see how that impacts upon performance. That's something that requires some investigation to get correct. So that's all I want to say about the assignment. I think that's given enough guide for now. Do you have any specific questions about the assignment? Have you started? Have you started the assignment? Yes? Not yet? Okay, get started as soon as possible, then you can ask me more questions. Any specific questions about the assignment? Have you started? When are you going to start? Soon, okay. Sooner the better. Any questions? Is it all going to be easy? Okay. So, summary, four different scenarios. Change one parameter at a time. That's the window and the length parameters of iPerf. Use TC and IP tables, and I gave you the exact commands in those websites or those links. And try this case. Calculate your bandwidth delay product and try to investigate the performance comparing the bandwidth delay product to the window size. I know some of you have done tests with different window sizes. The performance doesn't change. Repeat those tests with a different bandwidth delay product and see what happens. And I think that's all I have to cover today. So let's finish there. And next week we'll continue and finish on streaming and IPTV.